Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas, here on RPPFM 98.7 on your Peninsula dial, 98.3 Frankston. Welcome, mate. How are you on this fine morning?
Joe, I'm exhausted.
Exhausted?
I'm exhausted.
Well, we have had an absolute mammoth week, and we've got a mammoth show coming up as well. We've got Fergus Watts, who's the Managing Director of Bastion EBA. He's going to be on the show later on talking about branding for your club, which is basically, it's basically a word that's used in the industry to talk about your club's reputation and how we protect it, how we enhance it, how we use it to get more sponsorship dollars for your club. So we're really looking forward to talking to Fergus because he's been involved in that part of sport for a long time, hasn't he, mate?
He won't sugarcoat anything, and he might turn a little bit of people's thinking about how they look at sponsorship, particularly in their brand. Fergus was very heavily involved in the conceptualizing of Sports Community, so he's a very, 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 very clever man.
Okay, and we're going to start off with one of the landmark announcements, I think, for sports community. I'm sure you agree. It's the announcement of the recent Bowls training contract with Bowls here. And Steve, you're a major part of that happening. I wonder if you could just talk us through it, what it means, what it involves, and what we can look forward to in the time to come.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. A couple of days ago, Bowls Victoria announced that they'd entered into a 3-year partnership with Sports Community for us to train their 523 Bowls clubs. So
it's massive.
It's a massive training exercise from a sport, and from my perspective, what Bowls are looking for from that partnership is to build the capacity of their clubs to deliver their strategic objectives. So it's really a really exciting opportunity to get involved with a sport, not just like we do with a lot of our training sessions and fly in, fly out, and no skin in the game, Joe. This time we're all in. You know, we're looking at the strategic plan. We're working with the clubs. We're looking at all the research that relates to Bowls, and we're working with the sport to work out how we as the formal training provider can help them achieve their strategic objectives, which is really, really exciting, and it's being done in conjunction with a lot of input from Bowls Australia as well. So we're using all the resources, or the partnership between Bowls and Sports Community is using all the resources available within the Australian sports industry to create this brilliant or a training program with brilliant objectives.
Mm. And it's fantastic that the sport, Bowls Victoria, have invested in this kind of development. It just goes to show just how serious they are about making their sport a success.
Well, and in one regard, oh, absolutely. I mean, I found that the vision of Rosemary Vardy, the president and the board, and then Graham Bridge and his team, Paul Winslow at Bowls Victoria, to be unbelievable. Because this is a training program that I don't know has been attempted before at certainly at a state level, that to work on the development, on the formalised development program. And we're talking about 20 plus hours of training per club. So it's a significant investment that the clubs are going to be asked to make in their own development. But I have not yet, I don't know of another sport, Joe, that has consciously made that decision that we're going to invest so much into the building the capacity of the clubs. Lots of sports have regional development managers, and Bowls itself has community development managers and people that are working with the clubs. But use Bowls as an example. Like, there's 4 community development officers for 523 clubs. So how much support can you realistically get when you're trying to train those clubs and change their behaviour? And that's the really exciting thing. And also for Bowls, the reality is they had to change. They had to do something, because in the last 30 years, they've lost 50% of their, Australia-wide, they've lost, participation has reduced by 50% in 30 years. So give it another 10, 15 years with the baby boomers going through, you know, the the bowling age, if you like, which is the 50 to 70 age group. And if bowls doesn't change, our current bowlers finish, there's not necessarily going to be the next generation coming through. But Rosemary and Graham and Paul and Bowls Australia are very, very aware of this. So that's why they've gone through a very logical process, Joe. They've put in place the community development offices a couple of years ago with the assistance of the Australian Sports Commission. They've then spent the next 2 years doing a lot of research with different tools that the commission have got. And then just recently, they then commissioned La Trobe University to then delve right into the barriers and benefits of sports. So they've done a lot of thinking, and now it's at that stage where it's the execution stage where we empower the clubs to with the skills that they need to achieve the strategic plan of the sport, supported by all the other infrastructure that the sport's got in place.
You're with Joe Novella and Steve Pellis here on Sports Community Radio, 98.7 FM, Peninsula, 98.3 FM, Frankston, on your dial, RWP FM, your Peninsula Radio. We're talking about the Sports Community and Bowls Victoria partnership. Now, mate, when you talk about building the capacity of the clubs, exactly what are you talking about? Are we talking increasing volunteers, changing the culture, retaining, rewarding volunteers, increasing participation, or all of those?
It is. But it's all of that and more, and putting it in a way that builds on each other. So what we're thinking at the moment, and it's very much a work in progress, the development of the plan, the training schedule or the training program at the moment, but what we're thinking is for metropolitan clubs, there'd be 6 3-hour sessions on uniquely different things, but all building on each other. So we're thinking that the first one will be on about strategic planning and creating that culture of volunteerism or volunteering within the club. Because, I mean, Joe, you know, we've just come and we'll talk a lot more about our trip around the Northern Territory later after we talk to Ferg. But there seems to be, or not seems to be, there is certainly a lot less volunteers or people volunteering their time. Now, that's a cultural behaviour, and so we need to teach clubs. We can't just say you've got to volunteer more. We need to teach clubs how to facilitate that, how to facilitate people volunteering more, how to develop that culture. And it doesn't just happen overnight with a click of the fingers. It's a long-term strategy. So we'll start with that, because we're going to then move into lots of things going to require people to do things, so we need to find those people, because it's not the job of the committee to do all the tasks that relate to a club. So that'll be one session. Another session, which I know is very, very close to your heart, is communication skills, communication strategies. So building that sense of belonging to your club, whether it be from your participants, your players, your sponsors, your community. So, and one of the areas that I'm really looking forward to working on is, or working with the clubs, is the introduction of digital media and social media. So the power of websites and the power of email newsletters and the power of social media. And this is going to be a challenge, Joe, in a sport that typically has only about 30% of its participants on email. So I'm really looking forward to that. Then we're probably going to do two sessions on participation strategies and breaking the communities down and potential bowlers into groups and workshopping that to see how we as a sport and as communities can increase the number of participants within our clubs. So that won't be in that lecture style. That'll be very much a workshop sort of thing with everyone working together. So I think that they're going to be a couple of really exciting sessions. The fifth session is you know, near and dear to everyone's heart. So that's going to be a fundraising sort of focus. So whether it be sponsorship, increasing the capacity or the revenue coming from your facilities, or might look at it from a capital raising perspective as well, because a club might need to raise $500,000 to $1 million to renovate the pavilion, change their greens, that sort of thing. So how do we pull together those sort of strategies? And then last but not least is almost the one that I guess people are interested in the least, but probably is the most important. So we'll tackle the corporate governance issues. So work people through the Incorporated Associations Act, strong management, financial controls, and also risk management. So it's a very, very, very diverse range of skills to replicate the diverse range of skills that volunteers need, Joe. So very, very exciting for us. It looks like we'll have to do probably up to 80 sessions. So in Melbourne, we'll do them in one format. In regional areas, we'll probably do them as full-day sessions. So we'll combine a number of sessions into a day so that those people travelling long distances have less travel. But very, very much the thing that excites me so much and having been part of the sports community training development, Joe, the sessions are not lectures. We do not lecture. They are very interactive. They are very workshoppy. They are harnessing the skills of the group, which is very, very exciting and more than exciting, is very, very powerful. So I'm really looking forward to working with Bowls Victoria and Bowls Australia. The first couple of sessions we'll just trial it in the Mornington Peninsula region and another region within the city around the Donvale area, and then I think we're just going to do one series in Bendigo just to get it right. While the majority of bowls clubs are shut for the winter season, and then we'll schedule all the remaining areas. We'll schedule in that September, October, November time where the clubs are just firing up for the summer season and ready to go. So it's a very exciting time, and I guess, Joe, from a sports community perspective, it's a moment that we've been working towards for a long period of time, and I know that you are, and I know I am very proud that we get the opportunity to work so closely with the sport.
Absolutely, absolutely, and a lot of kudos needs to go with the management team of that sport. I mean, they could have easily sat back and watched, which they didn't do, because as you mentioned, they went about putting in community development staff and engagement staff and doing the research, and obviously not willing to just sit back and watch the sport continue its trend downwards. You know, we often talk about croquet as being the most popular sport at the turn of the century, and now it's not played all that much. Not that bowls was ever in any danger of doing that, but this is a management team that's taking the bull by the horns, and they're doing something about changing the way the sport is progressing and tracking, and with some targets, and we're just pleased as punch that they've chosen us to be their partner in developing the sport further and reaching all the objectives that they've set themselves.
Oh, you summed it up beautifully, Joe. But the thing that's really impressed me about bowls, both at the national level and at the Victorian level, is it's been a very strategic thinking. Like, this is not just something that they've come up with over the last 6 or 7 months. You know, the Bowls Australia and Bowls Victoria and all the other associations around the country, to be fair, are working in a very coordinated, very disciplined, very logical manner to which to tackle what is a very serious issue within their sport, which is the capacity of their clubs. And so that framework we just fit into and provide that theoretical training, which all their other support services, which are well and truly in place, the CDOs and their communications and their magazines and their very clearly defined strategic plan at the national and state level. You know, for us, that makes it very easy because we know, it doesn't make it easy, but it makes it very clear what the sport is trying to do. And yeah, where it is,
and you know, it's not all doom and gloom by no stretch of the imagination. Bowls is still a very, very popular sport, and We've seen an explosion in participation as a result of the diversifying of the product.
Social bowling,
yep. These kind of things. So it's no by no means doom and gloom. But what the management of the sport have done is they've isolated a trend which is not a trend that they want to see, and they've put in place some steps to rectify that. So that's great.
Yeah, very proud to be a part of it, Joe, and we'll talk regularly throughout the year on the progress of that program and what we learn from it.
Hi, I'm Jack, and my dad is Pete from the Mornington and Rosebud Chelsea stores. My dad has been really busy lately helping customers get the right home bundle, internet and mobile phone plans. But it's not just my dad. All the staff are really friendly and ready to help. So drop in and see the team at Telstra store in Mornington and Rosebud.
Or call us on 1300-MY-TELSTRA. That's 1300-698-357.
And in the meantime, I'm off to kick the footy with Dad.
Hey Jack, kick it to me.
A station sponsor.
No matter what the news.
Heard an almighty bang.
It hit so fast.
The ground was shaking.
Local.
People running up and down screaming.
There was grass everywhere.
I can't believe this is happening.
National.
He is now the Wizard of Oz.
International.
There it is! A fantastic game.
Are we ready?
Magnificent. It was a dream come true.
Hear it all on RPFM.
Dreaming of a place which is abundant with fresh fruits, herbs and vegetables, cheeses, seafood, bread, cakes and many other regional delicacies? Well, stop dreaming, as the Farmers Market in Mornington has all that and a whole lot more. Enjoy freshly made coffee and ready-to-eat food in an environment which the kids will love. Open every second Saturday of every month from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. $2 per adult. Children are free. The Farmers Market Mornington, our station sponsor.
More and more people with a taste for quality are shopping at Eliza Meats. Kevin and his lean team pride themselves on the finest cuts. From juicy steaks and roasts to high-grade mince and sausages. And Eliza Meats are the gourmet specialists. Inquire about Eliza Meats Spit Hire. Phone 9787 4473 for a mouth-watering meal fit for a king. It's all at Eliza Meats. See our sponsor Kevin at Eliza Meats, 112B Mount Eliza Way, a station sponsor.
The waiting is over. Watch the big men fly. Don't miss a minute of the action. Join Toe Punt Kelly and the boys as they bring you all the excitement of the local football season. RPFM, your home of local football.
This is Sally from Sweet Pea Cuisine. At Sweet Pea Cuisine, we specialise in sharing knowledge, passion and enjoyment around food. We run cooking classes for kids, teens and adults, present food events and cooking demonstrations, create recipes to highlight your product and style food for the camera. Join me every Tuesday morning on the breakfast program when I chat about all things food on the peninsula. To find out more, visit me at www.sweetpeacuisine.com.au and like my Facebook page, Sweet Pea Cuisine. Stay sweet with Sweet Pea Cuisine.
You're on RPP 98.7 and 98.3 on the peninsula.
Okay, welcome back to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. Peninsula 98.7 FM, Frankston 98.3 FM, on your dial, RPFM. We've got a very special guest with us today. His name is Fergus Watts. He's the Managing Director of Bastion EBA. Welcome to you, Fergus.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
No worries, Ferg. Ferg, thank you so much for jumping on the show. For those that know a little bit about the story of, or don't know anything about the story of Sports Community per se, you were the very first person that when I kind of had a fair bit of red wine and mapped out the concept that I came to speak to, and you were actually the first one that gave me the courage to talk to my wife about it, to be honest. But I guess a lot of that early discussion that we had was about the brand and about the value of Sports Community and sports in the local community, and that stuck with me, that conversation, all the way through. So it's a topic that clubs don't take a lot of time to think about, is their their brand and the value of their brand and the brand to the community. So if you could kind of elaborate on that a little bit, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, look, I mean, one of the really interesting things about local sport is the value that that has to commercial partners. You know, I mean, the local sporting clubs, local sporting organisations obviously have a significant value to their local community, you know, in terms of what they bring holistically, what they bring in terms of bringing a community together, what they bring in terms of educating young people, those different things. But commercially, they have great value as well. Now, generally, the way commercial value is rated is on media exposure and is on brand awareness. So if you're looking at the local Mornington Peninsula Football League, that provides a minimal amount of media exposure, a minimal amount of brand awareness for a local club. But that's not the only thing the brand's looking for. You know, really, when you break it down in terms of what a brand is looking for through any level of corporate partnership, what they're looking for is to sell more of their product. So how can they use your club as an asset to sell more of their product, whether that might be, it might be an energy company as an example. There's however many people are engaged in that local sports club, call it 1,000, call it 2,000, whatever the numbers are. Every one of those homes uses energy. So that becomes a valuable group of people for an energy company, yet local clubs aren't selling themselves in that way because there's a lot of other things to do, right, when running a club. But if you're thinking about the commercial value that a local club can offer, it can offer a significant amount of local value to brands to use that group and that database to sell more product. And that's where the value of these things can be overlooked a little bit, and clubs still continue to run on fumes because getting sponsorship dollar is really down to tapping on the shoulder of a couple of the mums and dads that kids go to the club who has a business that they can chip in $5,000.
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen, even in the last 2 years, there's been a significant shift towards grassroots sponsorship from the majors, and the one that springs to mind at the moment is Bogues Veer helping grassroots sports. So what are the groups that you're working with that are working with grassroots sports? But also on the other side of the coin, how can clubs start to tap into this movement and be approaching the major sponsors?
Well, look, I mean, so to answer your question in terms of who are we working with in that respect, so a brand, we have a client called Choice Hotels. They run a group of hotel chains. Now, there are, across the country, there's a ton of Choice Hotels, and there's also a ton of local clubs that travel to play games on the weekend. And they all need to stay in a hotel. Now, that's a hotel, it's a lot of hotel stays. It's a $6.2 million market of local sports clubs staying in hotels. Now, for Choice Hotels, as you can imagine, that is a very valuable market. And the answer is, the question is, how do you get all of these local sports clubs staying at Choice Hotels, every time they travel? And that's the thing that we're looking at creating, and where we are in the middle of creating now. We've got 150 local clubs signed up to this. Now, if a governing body can pull something similar together for energy as an example, or for phones, or for fuel, or for hotels, or for whatever it might be, that becomes a valuable asset for a brand. And that's the kind of thing in terms of why people want to support. So how do you then go and answer your second question? How do you go and grow go and approach these brands and go and hit them up and provide value? Find ways to sell more of their stuff. And if you can do that, if you have mums and dads that want to support their local club and they're happy to switch their energy provider, and you've got 500 of them, that is a very valuable thing, and it's worth, you know, X number of $1,000 that brand will pay to the club, if that makes sense. It really is as simple as that, and can be broken down as basically as that, but more often than not, just gets overlooked.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we've had Laura from Choice Hotels talking about this, their Choice Sports program on our program, which is absolutely fantastic. One of the things that we notice with clubs, Ferg, is that they seem to underestimate the size of their audience or the size of the group of people that they have the ability to influence and therefore sell other people's product. I mean, can you just elaborate on, and I know you're heavily involved in various local sports, but from a branding commercials perspective, when you're working at that level, what's the totality of their audience that they can take to a sponsor? It's not just the number of members they've got, is it?
No, it's the amount of people that care about the club. So if you're in a local town or you have a range of other people, it's a bit like the old chocolate drive. You know, they used to do the chocolate drives where you'd sell the box of Cadbury chocolate, and it was one of the largest fundraising activities in the country for a long period of time, and
still is.
Until banned that, yeah. Well, they went into had some issues with obesity, a whole bunch of other stuff selling chocolates, but it's the same thing. So you've all of a sudden got one 10-year-old boy who plays football at a local club. He takes his thing and he needs to go and sell it to 20. He needs to sell 20 chocolate bars, right, or 50 chocolate bars.
Yeah.
Although the people he sells the chocolate bars to aren't directly affiliated with the club, they do care about this young boy, right? And it might be family, friends, and they have an affiliation there. So why can't chocolate become, and I'll keep using the same example, why can't chocolate become energy?
Mm, absolutely.
And go around and say, look, if we can provide you a comparable rate on energy, you know, maybe somebody flick their lights on, to go from Energy Australia to Origin Energy, would you switch and that would support club, you know, club Y, whoever that might be?
Yeah.
The answer, more often than not, we've seen is yes.
Yep.
The trouble is, the difficulty is getting enough people together and on the same page to have a discussion as comfortably as they have about chocolate, to have about energy. Now, you don't have to be an expert in energy. You just need to provide enough leads coming in that says every time you sign up with an Origin account, Origin Energy will give my football club $100.
Yep. Yeah.
That, you know, and they'll give it $100 for as long as you stay a customer, you know. And I'm pulling all these numbers out. I'm using Origin as an example. They
sure.
don't do this.
It could be the butcher. Could be the
It could
the
be
supermarket.
Anybody.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. So if you can then generate that and be able to track the way that comes down, generally local clubs, exactly as you say, they say that, you know, we don't have enough people. We've only got 500 people on our database.
Yes.
You know, that's not enough.
We hear that all the time, Ferg, all the time.
But you've got a lot of people connected to those 500 people. And if those 500 people can all get 50 people each, those numbers become significant.
Yes.
And what you'll find is that people really care about their local community and they care about their local sport. Now, they might not care enough to go because if you're talking junior clubs, maybe they don't have a kid that plays there. You know, maybe they'd only engage in whatever that might be. You see it at the big levels as well. You know, you see within the NRL that attendance is low because culturally, you know, they really only ever get, speaking generally, kind of 15,000.
Yep.
Would go,
yep.
Which then, by default, makes their memberships relatively low.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're only going twice a year, you're not buying a membership. It's cheaper to just buy a ticket, right? But there's still 600,000 or 700,000 people that support each individual club.
Yeah.
That's where the value is, not the 10,000 members you've got. But a lot of the value that clubs see is in the members, the database, the people that are sticky to the club. They're the people that are sticky and they're the ones that aren't going. Your real value is in the 500,000 people that support the club but don't actually do anything about it. If you can get them commercial involved in the club and supporting the club without having to buy a $150 membership, without having to go, you know, twice a year and drag their kids along and buy an $8 bottle of water and a $10 pie, that's costing you $200 at the end of the day. If you can get them making small changes to their life, that, you know, we all go to the supermarket, we all have energy providers, we all have a phone, we all use, most of us drive a car, you know, and have fuel.
Yep.
If you can find ways to make them make small changes to their everyday life that doesn't really put them out, and by doing that, they are supporting their club or their local area or whatever it might be, then all of a sudden their support
turns into a monetary value for a club. Now, it's not. It's you know, I can talk about it like it's an easy thing to do. The reason it doesn't happen at the moment is because pulling all resources together is a difficult because clubs are isolated.
Yeah.
You know, club runs individually. And as you very well know, and the reason you started Sports Community is to provide more support back to the volunteers and the administrators of these places because they're under the pump.
Yep, they're
trying to open the canteen on the weekend and they're trying to put on 10 teams to play a game, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, and they're trying to organise the best and fairest night, and they're trying to generate the 50 grand, 100 grand, 200 grand it takes to run the place.
Yes.
And, you know, and they're generally relying on very few people. So that's why this stuff doesn't happen. But if you throw resources behind actually doing it and purely think through the lens of how do I sell more product for this brand, you're then starting to go down the right path.
Yeah, absolutely. If I can change the angle a little bit, we talk about the value to the businesses within town or the bigger corporates or whatever, but that value and that brand and the reputation of that your club, it can very easily come unstuck. And I think, I mean, even in the last week, there's been discussion about, say, the behaviour of Michael Malthouse in the coach's box and the, you know, being associated with those brands and those sorts of things. So it's very easy for clubs, even local clubs, to destroy that the value and their reputation within the community, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And the brand of Carlton or the brand of the South Sydney Rabbitohs can be ruined overnight.
Yes.
You know, you're not going to lose your diehard fans, you're not going to lose your significant supporters. But the ones on the fringe of which there's generally a lot of them, they can turn off pretty quick when brand becomes an issue. Now, in local clubs, you know, one of the challenges from a brand perspective with local clubs to get any great value out of your brand is that someone like me who's been involved in, you know, like sport all my life, mainly football, I can speak reasonably intimately about three or four local clubs that I've been involved in and would barely know the name of most others.
Yep.
That's the issue with using brand as your guiding point, your starting point. But at the same time, those four clubs that are dear and close to me, if they do something that hurts their brand, I then think differently about that club. And I'm so emotionally involved in that place, much more emotionally involved than I am about any professional team.
Yes.
You know, much more emotionally involved, you know, and I know that people in those clubs, they're significantly emotionally involved. If that brand of that club, maybe it's players keep getting fights every weekend, you know?
Yes.
That significantly affects junior participation. It affects local businesses wanting to get involved. It affects families wanting to go and watch the game on the weekend, and that affects ticketing, it affects attendance, it affects a whole bunch of stuff. Might be as simple and as basic as players getting a fight on the weekend.
Yeah.
And the players might not think anything of it, and it might be flying the flag, and it might be all this stuff that we talk about in football, or, you know, and it's a football example.
Yes.
But it does affect the brand. You know, in the same way I think of one of the brand essences of our local club is that it's very culturally involved, very engaging, very community focused. If it becomes too hardcore about money, then it sort of loses its essence a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, potentially. And I think all those things that is just my personal opinion. The reality is a brand is built on being consistently one thing for a long period of time.
Absolutely.
And yep. If each local club can say, this is what we are, and this is what we're doing, and this is why we exist, and they're very clear about that, then they will get like-minded partners, they will get people come along for the ride, and they will get everyone pulling in the same direction. They will be getting people making the right decisions for the club based on the brand.
Yep.
And I think that's what churns a little bit in local clubs, is because one president will have one idea about running a club, and he'll run that for 5 years, and then when the 13-year-old becomes an 18-year-old, a new president comes along and he's got a completely different way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the same club he signed up for.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, we see that all the time. The other thing that we're seeing more and more that is hurting the club's reputation or the brand is, I was going to say social media, but it's not social media. It's a social media event of some description, and whether it be an unsatisfactory or inappropriate Facebook post or a series of tweets or maybe a bit more a verbal discussion on a forum that intensifies out of acceptability. Those sorts of scenarios are now happening quite regularly within clubs. And with another hat on, Ferg, I know you're heavily involved in Undertow Media, which is a PR company that does a lot of social media. How do you recommend to the presidents where there's been an unsatisfactory event on their social media platforms or their websites or their forums? How do you suggest that they handle that in this day and age? Because a lot of them just don't know about what to do there, but then also don't realise how these incidents can then blow up to be incredibly viral catastrophes in some instances.
One of the difficult, unanswerable questions there is, because we're seeing it in every industry, everywhere. It's just no different people that work in at Bastion or at Undertow with me. You know, their social media presence is a representation of our business by default.
Yep.
You know, now it's a little bit different with industry and staff that get paid to be somewhere.
Yes.
So because we pay them and then we, you know, there's some, I suppose, behavioural guidelines that need to roll through, and social media is one of them. Challenge your local clubs. If they're getting paid to play, you can very much dictate that, you know, you can't post these sort of things on your Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever it might be. And you can run a little bit more, I suppose, behavioural guidelines around that.
Yes.
If they're paying to play, you know, they pay their $300 subs every year and they play, very, very difficult.
Mm.
You don't really have any say over, you know, what they can and can't post because, you know, you're not engaging them to play at their club or be involved in their club. They're either volunteers or they're paying their own subs to play.
Mm. Or they're
so it becomes a difficult discussion. My opinion is the answer is to educate them on how that impacts the club.
Yes.
And if the player, administrator, whoever cares enough, they won't do it. If they don't care about the club and what the president says and how that, and, you know, the knowledge they now have about how that impacts the club, they don't care enough and they do it anyway, it's very difficult to stop. You know, that to me brings a cultural issue within the club that you got to get the players caring more about the club.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before Joe asks you a question, Ferg, just to finalise that topic then, if there's an unsatisfactory, say, Facebook post that's been posted onto the club's Facebook page, for instance, do you recommend that the club obviously would pull that post down if it was unsatisfactory, but do you recommend, or does it depend on the circumstances, whether there's a formal official response to an unsatisfactory, or do you let it go, unsatisfactory post, or do you let it go, or what?
Look, again, it's case by case.
Yes.
I'd be looking at, you know, if it is a big issue, you ask the person to take that down. Generally, that's enough. If by then it's got some serious traction and it's really affecting things, then, you know, you might choose to get proactively and go that. I think local clubs, it's you know, I don't know if you're getting that significant traction that you've got to get out there and make a proactive statement. You know, I do know that I can't remember the two clubs involved, but one of the guys that works for us was a district cricketer.
Yes.
And he kind of dead batted the ball down the pitch, he didn't take a run, but failed to go back inside his crease and just kind of went guarding down the pitch. And the opposition team threw the stumps over and he was out. Right? Now, technically he's out, but there was a big deal within the cricket circles about whether he was out or not, and whether the fielding side was being bad sports, and whether that, you know, or whether the guy that works with us, the batsman, is just, you know, should have grounded his bat. Now that became significantly viral, and it got to a point where they were saying whatever the fielding side was, they always do this. They're bad sports. Yep. They're a terrible club. They're this. They're that. They're something else.
Great example.
That then becomes quite a negative issue based on the brand of that club. Now, you know, what can you do about it? Difficult to say without being involved.
Mm.
Sometimes if you come out and go, no, we're not, we're a really great club, you're putting fuel on the fire. You know, sometimes yep. you let these things go. It really is case by case, and there's no silver bullet answer.
Okay, you're with Fergus Watts, MD at Bastion, and also with Joe and Steve here on Sports Community Radio, RPPFM 98.7 FM on the Peninsula, 98.3 FM in Frankston. Ferg, just before you go, you mentioned clubs, it comes down to simply being able to sell more product for potential partners of your community grassroots sports club. What are the actual machinations of making that happen? Because we talk to a lot of clubs that say, well, we want to do that, but when we're knocking on people's doors, they're not getting back to us. We're not quite should we be putting a proposal? I mean, what's the kind of information that would get a club over the line in convincing a potential sponsor to come on board?
Well, I think if you can have that discussion, you walk into the local butcher and you say, how much meat do you sell every month, and then it gives you a number, and you say, right, well, if we can sell you 10% more, does that work for you? He would say yes. So then you've just got to find a way to do that. Now, it might be through, you know, I'm assuming that most of the families within that support whatever this club is, they would buy meat maybe once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. Now, instead of buying it at the supermarket, if they bought it through the butcher and they bought it with their special card that gives them a discount, but all meat that gets purchased through people that are engaged with this club go by through Bob's Butcher, that gives Bob a significant increase in sales. He doesn't need to get a space on a jumper or shorts or anything like that. He just needs to get a bunch of plastic cards printed up that they give out and dish out to everyone. So every time you go and sell it, every time they go buy meat, they buy it from Bob. You know, I think it's a very basic discussion around how can we sell more of your product. If it's a local pizza store and they get food in after every game, instead of making sandwiches, buy from the pizza store.
Yeah.
You know, like if you say, there's 12 home games for the year, we're going to buy 30 pizzas from you every Saturday for 12 weeks of the year. That's going to equate to a dollar value for you of whatever that is, right? And in return, we want $5,000, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever the numbers are. Something just as simple and basic as that. Use what you do currently. They buy a ton of beer.
Yep.
Right? So how can you find a, you know, and I know there's porridge rights sewn up with a lot of governing bodies and things like that, but if there's not, how do you find a local brewer? How do you find, you know, something publican. That's a bit different? Or, yeah, a local publican, whatever it might be, buy it through him. Instead of buying straight through Lion or CUB or whoever they buy it through, buy through the local publican, figure out what the numbers are that work, he provides the sponsorship back, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a significantly different way of looking at sponsorship rather than trying to sell the jumper sponsor and the short sponsor and the naming rights sponsor for the scoreboard and the ground sponsor and that sort of thing, isn't it? Create value for the partner.
Exactly. Because if we're honest, buying a jumper sponsorship doesn't give you anything.
Doesn't create value.
It's a worthless asset that is a feel-good thing to see someone run around with your brand out there. And it's no different. I mean, I'm speaking generally here. There are some clubs that get a significant amount of media value and it works really well in professional sport. But there's a bunch of clubs that the money they need to sell their jumper for doesn't equate for the amount of value that a brand would get back if they bought it. So they've got to fill that with a whole bunch of other assets. Now, the local club, you might charge $5,000 or $10,000 to put a name on a jumper. It's a feel-good thing, you know. I'd be very interested to see all the stats and say how many actually buy that space with no affiliation in the club at all.
Yeah.
I would say it'd be a very, very small percentage. Most of them buy it because they feel good about it, and they want to give back to the club and all these things that, you know, all these terms we keep using, which is nice, but it means that when their kid doesn't play there anymore, sponsorship's gone. You've got to go find another one.
Yeah, that's right. Fergus Watts, Managing Director of Bastion EBA. You don't sugarcoat a thing, which is why I came to you with the sports community concept at the start. The truth sometimes hurts, but it is fantastic way. And the way you looked at sponsorship was brilliant. And Ferg, thank you so much for coming on the show. And if we can have you back again in coming weeks, we'd love to do so.
Always pleasure. Anytime.
Fergus Watts, Managing Director of Bastion EBA. Joe.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas. Missed a couple of episodes? Don't worry. Simply visit our website at www.sportscommunityradio.com.au and download previous episodes to listen at your leisure. Sports Community Radio, another sports community digital production.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. You're with Sports Community Radio here on RPFM, the voice of the peninsula, 98.7 FM on your dial, 98.3 in Frankston. So make sure you have your radio attuned to us all the time. And we're going to be talking about our recent trip to Darwin, the Sports Community Roadshow, for lack of a better word.
And Alice Springs, Joe.
And Alice Springs, of course. Which both towns we love very, very much. We were up there just recently in the last week to present our training courses on a variety of subjects that are essential to grassroots sports clubs, to their success. And we had a fantastic, fantastic time up there. It was hard work, wasn't it, mate?
It was
15 or 16 hour day. So it wasn't, you know, we weren't up there on a holiday, but the people that we met, and the clubs in the club people that we met up there in Darwin and in Alice Springs, not only were they keen and eager to learn, but they're just fantastic people to boot.
Well, I think the word that I was thinking about as we were coming back on the plane was inspiring.
Mm.
To be honest, I mean, here we are presenting and facilitating a conversation on topics that we love. And I found myself being inspired by their stories in all the sessions, and inspired by their vision, and inspired by what they're trying to achieve. And I think I said in the last group, we certainly get more out of that sort of roadshow up into the territory than we give, which I hope we give a lot, but we certainly get back a lot, Joe. So.
Yeah, what I might do is I might set the platform for the listeners out there so they know what we were doing up there.
What we're talking about.
But Sports Community has been invited up to the Northern Territory by the Northern Territory government. First occurrence was last year. We were invited back this year. A big thank you to the Northern Territory government up there in Gordon, and also Benita Bittner, who is the manager of NT Sport and Recreation and Racing in Central Australia. Those guys have got us back up there. We present, I think, probably up to five different courses around governance for your sports club, social media and marketing and communication, fundraising, and we also...
Volunteering and
creating a positive culture. So... Yep. Those are the kinds of courses that we present. They generally go for 3 hours. They're a lecture style as well as doing workshops where we walk the clubs through real life examples and situations that they can apply their new skills to go out to their clubs and do their marketing better, look after their governance better, fundraise better, do all these kind of things and that make clubs successful. So,
but better, Joe, probably in our terminology means... easier and more fun.
Easier and more fun.
Because
we're
inherently lazy people ourselves, Joe. So we try to use that negative characteristic of our personalities to become a strength and make it easier for clubs to do what they've got to do. So
yeah, and look, for the folks that are in the southern states and in the eastern and western state that haven't been to the NT or have been to the NT but probably haven't taken too much notice of the sporting sporting arena there. It's an amazing, amazing place. The government sponsors sport in a sensational way up there, providing world-class sporting fields and assets for the use by the community. And that has fostered such a diverse range of sports that Steve and I were constantly amazed at the kind of sports that were turning up to our sessions, including, you know, we had fishing. Maybe that's the wrong one to start with, because there's much
debate, Joe, whether fishing is a sport, and we're not going to get into that debate.
We're not going to get into that debate.
The Sports Commission says it's not a sport.
Join the show at sportscommunity.com.au if you need to email us. But sports like motorway racing,
go-kart racing,
shooting, yep. Definitely lots of variety of BMX was another big one. Many of these non-traditional or non-oval ball type sports were turning up to our sessions, and it's just amazing at the outdoor lifestyle that they have up there in the territory.
It is, isn't it? It's a completely different profile of training attendees at the training sessions. In Victoria, we get the football, the cricket, the netball, the basketball, the horsey sports. But we didn't get much of that. Well, we certainly got the horse, different horses, horse-based sports, riding for disabled, for instance, in Alice Springs. But certainly the diversity of outdoor and shifting towards the adrenaline-type sports too, Joe, and the motorized adrenaline, a lot more recreation-based. So moving away from the sport to the recreation activity. Mm, so whether it be the bushwalking or the game fishing, which that certainly looks like a sport to me. But we're not getting into that.
We're not going what wasn't different and what was common with the NT sports and nearly all the sports that we've been involved with, or sporting clubs around the country, is the challenges that they face on a day-to-day basis. Mm. And those challenges are pretty much reflective of all the different states and territories around the country, in that it's around raising more funds and keeping their volunteers. So the common challenge that we got from the folks up in the NT was that too few people do too much, and that leads to burnout. And in a nutshell, that's the main problem that they were experiencing up there.
Yeah, it's complicated by a couple of things too, Joe. Both the towns are very heavy itinerant, have a very big turnover of population. So the itinerant side of it. So if you're involved in a club, you could very well be not involved through no fault of your own, and not even in the town, relatively quickly. And also the tyranny of distance does play some challenges, particularly when you're pulling together the teams from the remote communities, which we didn't really get involved with in this trip, but we're really looking forward to looking at how the Aboriginal sporting culture is structured in the communities, which I'm looking forward to in the next couple of trips, Joe. That's something that I'm genuinely looking forward to, but in this trip it became very clear that the number of volunteers, well, no, not the number of volunteers, the mindset of the committee, like it is in everywhere else, is that it's the committee's job to do the work. And we opened up all the training sessions with a very confronting statement where we said it's not the job of the committee to run the club. And you know, there was a lot of blank stares in the room, Joe, and we let them think about it, and we kept talking, and no one had a reply as to what the job of the committee was. And the end of that sentence is, it's not the job of the committee to run the club, it's the job of the committee to ensure the club is run. And big change of mindset, and a lot of nodding heads when we say, you know, it's not just because it's a job that's got to be done within the club, it doesn't mean to say it's got to be done within the committee. So that's probably even more prevalent in the territory, where you've got such a small group of people doing all the work. So that was one of the really cool things about the trip, Joe, was where we started to look at strategies and ways of of getting more support from your club members, and without going into 3 hours of training, the surprise on people's face when we said ask for
yes,
the help
yes.
was quite staggering.
What do you want them to do? What do you want? And you know, as we don't mean to be flippant when we put forward that question, but a lot of clubs don't ask their volunteers to perform tasks at their club because the folks that are doing it just feel bad. And they feel like, oh, well, nobody's going to do it, so I might as well just do it anyway. But that is completely the wrong option. And one of the tools that we talked about a lot up in the Northern Territory were job profiles. And job profiles are great for clubs because they detail exactly what you need at your club, and you have a way of asking people to do jobs and not making them feel confident they can do it because they know what's expected of them. So
the funnest is that even a word? The funnest, the thing that the session that gave me the most satisfaction and the most entertainment and the most I don't know, I'll work out the word as we go, was a session we said making fundraising fun. And effectively in that session was we wanted to teach, or we did teach, the participants how to design a $10,000, how to design an event that would generate $10,000. And on the day that we did this one, Joe, you might remember that we did two sessions in that day. We did a morning session, had a break in the afternoon, and then came back for the evening. And I very vividly remember Andy, the president of the Gingilly BMX Club, just as he was walking out from the evenings at the lunch session. I said, "Oh, at the end of tonight's session, you'll be able to design a $10,000 event." And he looked at me and he didn't say anything. And he came back and we went through the session. And the session wasn't, we gave a little bit of information. We didn't tell them what events to do or anything like that. Each participant designed their own event. And Andy came up to me after that session, Joe, and he said, "Look, I came with a very open mind, but I didn't believe that you could show us how to design a $10,000, an event that was going to raise $10,000. Now I've sat through 3 hours, workshopped it, and I can't decide which of the six events that we as a group of people workshopped. I can't decide which one we're going to do." And
yeah, that's great.
And just vividly, you know, one of the exercises that we gave someone was to come up with, or a group of people was to come up with a $10,000 crowdfunding event. And the lady who was the primary person in that group was a very young, sprightly. She looked about 21, but she may have been slightly in her 50s or 60s. lawn bowler. And I think she might have been one of those that may not use the internet to its maximum and may not be on email and may not be on social media. But she got it. She saw this concept of crowdfunding and she immediately knew how it was going to go. And her enthusiasm was amazing and everyone in the room was just throwing ideas at her. And you could just see, Joe, what was going to happen at the next committee. She's going to walk into the bowls committee meeting the next day and she said, "Rightio. We're going to do a crowd raising fundraiser. Oh, that's not the right order, but work with me. And that uses this thing called the internet, and we're going to have to use this thing called Facebook, and we're all going to learn about it all at once because it's going to be very easy for us to do rather than doing lots and lots of sausage sizzles." And you know, she was one of our more senior people that we've had through the training, and to see her enthusiasm and not just her enthusiasm, but to be empowered, Joe, was really, really gratifying.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Crowdfunding.
Crowdfunding.
That's the tool that you were looking for. And look, I can't stress enough the success of those teams, those clubs and those grassroots sports in the Northern Territory has a lot to do with the passion of the government, the Northern Territory government. So to the Chief Minister and his team all the way down, They do a sensational job of providing support services for the grassroots sports clubs in the NT, and we are just one part of those support services for those grassroots sports clubs. Big thank you to the NT government for getting us up there so we can help your clubs.
There's another person that we've omitted to talk about, Joe, but on Twitter she called herself hashtag sports community groupie. And I think that's the first groupie that we've got, so we're feeling a little bit like the Rolling Stones at the moment. And that's Narelle Grestre from the Department of Sport, Rec and Racing, very, very heavily involved in baseball. But just before we finish the discussion, Joe, I just want to just draw your attention to the only part of the trip I didn't like. That was the last 10 kilometres of our 50-kilometre bike ride from Alice Springs to Simpsons Gap. I did not enjoy that one little bit. So next time we go to Alice Springs, we're taking the car to Simpsons Gap and we're going to go and ride a quad bike or something.